well as traditional Baroque instruments. This one-of-a-kind show will begin at 7 p.m. on Saturday, May 4th in the Whitney Center for the Arts. Get your tickets now. Visit sheridan.edu/arts or call the WCA box office at 675-0360. Shan Foster with Country Pet Inn on why training your dog is important.
Well, I kind of compare it to a child. Typically what we say is Junior's going to go to school. He's going to at least get a basic education, hopefully high school at the least. But through that, he's going to learn rules of the house, you know, taking out the trash, cleaning off the supper table, doing the dishes, mowing the lawn. Why doesn't our dog have certain duties? And so at the least, what I recommend is a GED for a dog, and that's basic obedience. The sitting, the staying, the downs. The come command, of course, is the most important. That could save a dog's life. Leave it is a super handy command, telling the dog, hey, whatever you're doing right now, don't do it anymore. It should have some sort of structure. It needs a job. It wants a job. So those are the things that I encourage people to look at in their dogs. How can this animal benefit us?
Find out more about training, boarding, and doggy day camp online at thecountrypetinn.com or call Shan Foster at 674-8542.
Sports. They're pretty cool. I like them a lot. In fact, I like them so much that I have a podcast about them. This is James Timberlake with the Weekend Sports Wrap Podcast. And every week we go through the top news stories of basketball, football, baseball, and everything else in between. And sometimes we'll ponder something different, like the first person to drink cow's milk. How'd that go? What was that conversation like with his peers? But we mainly talk about sports on the Weekend Sports Wrap Podcast, posted every week on SheridanMedia.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse. This morning, I am joined by the chief of the Sheridan Police Department, Travis Koltiska, and captain of the force, Tom Ringley. Good morning, gentlemen, and welcome back to the show. Now, when it comes to how things have been this spring season over at the department, has it been somewhat slow? Are things starting to pick up?
Oh, I think things are definitely starting to pick up. I mean, we've had pretty nice weather, right? Well, I can't complain about any weather all winter, but beautiful. The spring's shaping up to be beautiful, and as is the norm with nicer weather, comes the influx of issues that we need to deal with. So we have been very busy. You know, we post our weekly stats on our Facebook page, on our calls for service, and all some other pertinent information on there that people can always check out, and kind of get a gauge of how things are going. And it's a weekly snapshot of our activity, and so, but it's been good. It's just been busy.
Have you sat down and spoken with Sheridan County Emergency Management, Jesse Ludekaus, about the upcoming camp that will be taking place? I believe it's over in Gillette. I'll have to double check my information. But supposedly there's going to be a lot of folks coming in there with kids. And the kids get to go to camp, but the parents and the guardians will have to kind of find something else to do. And so Jesse was thinking, you know, hey, they might tourist a little bit around, go see what there is to see.
I don't really expect them to be a big source of problems for us.
Yeah. Right,
and
right.
There's a finite amount of hotel rooms in Sheridan and Airbnbs.
And they're usually full.
Lodging. It's always full, so why the people are here is not really relevant. It's the same number of people. So there's very little overlap.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. I mean, we really are getting to be
a destination.
A destination.
It is a destination. Yes.
People want to come here. They want to walk those trails. They want to go up into the mountains and kind of get that Wyoming experience. Mm-hmm. And boy, there's not many places better to do that than Sheridan.
Yeah. And we've got to focus on real threats and events that we can control. Something happening in Gillette, while it's a good big picture stuff, we have more than enough to keep us occupied with everyday community safety and planning for the events that are taking place here this summer.
Absolutely. Has that planning started?
Formally and informally. We are starting to see some permit applications come through, and we've had more discussions about, you know, because there's construction all over town again.
Oh, so yeah.
We're always trying to juggle that and how street closures affect and impact traffic flow and safety. So yeah, those discussions. And we've been doing this so many years that we know kind of already kind of what to expect a little bit.
Procedures are in place.
Yes, yeah. But there's just some nuances that they're going to change things a little tiny bit here and there that we need to plan for.
Now, this morning, we're going to talk about how throughout the year, the Sheridan Police Department comes across information presented to them and to others by the public, which is not necessarily accurate. Captain, you and I, setting these shows up, this is probably one of my favorite that you came up with. You know, let's talk about misconceptions, misinformation. Yeah. And so we do it periodically throughout the year. And every time you present some of the misinformation to me, I'm, you know, my flabber is a little gassed.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm like, wow, people kind of believe this stuff.
Yeah. And usually they're true myths. We discussed the origin of the law enforcement myths. You know, crime, as we always discuss, crime sells. It's, if you look at all the, not only books and movies, but also podcasts, you know, the true crime podcasts, you know, they're very popular, and that's for a reason. Most of the way we discussed in the past are fairly good natured, a little bit of ribbing going on with the community. But today, they're more procedural, and yeah. They're not really myths. They're just some more misconceptions about how the police department operates and more importantly, how we can serve the community and who's doing the serving.
Yeah.
So in the near future, we will get back to the true myths. these are some things that were kind of timely, and relevant to some questions that, some of our customers have asked us.
Now, if we were to say that there was a primary source of misinformation, I know we talk about, you know, how people watch TV and the movies and they get this idea that Hollywood somehow sets precedence for the, for law enforcement.
It is, but also we can't not address social media. I know the community gets frustrated with the amount that we, or what we will, the amount of information we will provide on a given incident. Say for instance, just this, our last post regarded some people trying door handles on a Ring camera. And people always want more information, and they want better quality video, and they want to know locations. Well, we're going to protect the privacy of the people providing the information. That where something happened is not relevant to what we're asking. We know where something happened. We're simply asking for if anybody knows the people in the video that are committing a crime. And also, we will not release information that will hinder the prosecuting attorney's ability to fairly prosecute an investigation.
I think one for me on those type of situations, and it even happened on this last one, as they always ask, is about the quality. Don't you have a better video quality? Well, we're not
NASA
making it bad and putting the worst stuff on there. If we had better quality video, we would put it on there.
Absolutely.
I mean, technology's gone far when it comes to video quality over the years, but there are still things that the video can't capture accurately. And that's when you come to those myths of let's get a computer program to enhance.
Yeah.
You know,
that
and word,
enhance.
I still remember a movie years ago where they said, when they were looking at surveillance footage, and they said something to the fact, well, can the computer see the other side? Can the camera see the other side? They said the computer can hypothesize. I'm like, yeah. Oh, great. There's another thing that they're going to expect, that the community is going to, people are going to expect law enforcement to be able to do, is
that AI can just make something up.
Hypothesize computers.
So, well, even then, a theory even made by a computer or an AI, that's not admissible. If a computer could do
correct.
That wouldn't be admissible.
There may be technology out there that's has some capabilities greater than what ours are at this time, but we provide the best quality that we can to our community.
And again, you know, when it comes to due process, there is so much that I think the general citizen or resident might not know
that
you have to take into account.
It leads into the the next topic, which is when people given high profile incidents and arrests, people requesting case reports, especially the media, not necessarily the radio stations and the papers, but some of the independent media. And we get the requests from print too, want copies of reports before they're adjudicated.
Yeah.
And adjudicated means they've run through the, either run through the court process and appeal process, or there's been a declination, but we can't release certain information to include reports and test results until there's an adjudication. Now, if something's, if information filed somewhere else, like an open court, then it is public record, but we're not, that's the court's and the prosecuting attorney's prerogative to release that information, not ours.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know people get frustrated with that. We're not hiding anything, but there are very specific rules. And for that legal process in general to work, it's got to be objective. We can't put a, years and years ago, I had a, went round and round with an outlet over a rape prosecution. And how are we supposed to find an impartial jury?
Yeah.
If all the details, if they know everything ahead of time.
Yeah.
So that's some of the rationale behind that. And the other misconception is that we can just print up a report and give it to someone. Well, our volume's so high that if our records division stopped everything they were doing and printed something up, they'd never get anything done. The process is people may request a report through our online portal.
Yeah.
And it's a simple process, and we're not withholding anything, but there is a process to go through.
And a lot of times, you'll look at these big cities, or you'll look at certain areas of the country where, oh, an insider has told the media XYZ. Well, that insider, okay, could have just put a case at risk because certain information might be known to the courts and to law enforcement, but not the general public. Once that information is out, it could set a case back by weeks. Or set a prosecutor
it can make a case go away completely.
Torpedo a case.
Yeah.
And it's a weak move. If we have something to say, we will come out front and say it. And if we think there's information the community needs to know, we will let them know. We're not going to hide behind an anonymity.
Yeah.
And understand that when it comes to evidentiary issues, there's a lot of stuff that we will not release regardless, because that's for multiple reasons, whether it's a case that has been sent to the prosecution because we have somebody in custody or requesting charges. Obviously, as Calvin was speaking earlier, that evidence cannot be presented in society or before ahead of the case. You know, so there's certain safeguards, as well as if you're in the middle of an investigation and there's nuances to cases, we withhold some of that because we know that oftentimes there's only the suspect and maybe another person that are aware of these certain situations, right? It's an investigative detail.
Right.
And so we don't, we want the community to know that there are some things we cannot and some things we will not release. But when it comes to transparency of our operations, we'll tell them everything.
Yeah.
It's about our operations and how the police department operates. That's where we don't withhold.
And when it comes to protecting victims, that's another thing that we even take very seriously here, and I hope other media does as well. You can tell a story about an event without destroying a reputation or throwing names out there about individuals who have already undergone some of the worst times in their lives.
And in my opinion, local media and the state media, to include surrounding states, have been fantastic and very understanding. And when I communicate with them, but you're right, there's no sense
revictimizing
people and making them relive the worst day of their life. You know, frequently I come across an investigation that's like, this would be a neat thing to put on social media to let people know how hard the officers and detectives and dispatchers are working, but I don't want a victim to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Relive something, even if it's a property crime, a burglary, for instance, it's so invasive and intrusive into somebody's life and psyche that I don't want to re-traumatize, or not I, but we as an institution are not going to re-traumatize somebody.
Yeah, there's a lot of neat stuff that we'd love to be able to tell.
Right.
You know, really, you know, through my career and I talked to the captains and even the officers, all the officers, there's things that are like, God, that would be a neat story to tell if we could. But we are just want to be very compassionate to all parties in this. And I think that's key to know, so for the community to know how we approach things, is that, you know, that is a big part of our philosophy down there, is we're going to do our job effectively and, you know, with justice in mind, but also displaying compassion for all those involved.
Absolutely.
There's a difference between need to know and desire to know.
Yep.
Absolutely. And when it comes to public safety, you know, no information is held back in regards to the public safety. But details that don't involve that, I think, you know, if it's going to re-victimize, as the chief said, someone who's already gone through this horrible experience.
Yes.
I support withholding that, because that person has got a life that they have to get on with as well. And you know, as a journalist, I'm not totally sure if everyone would agree with me on that, but I'm hoping that the majority do, because ethics and morals and values have to account for something. And you know what? So does compassion.
Yes.
Above and beyond all things. On that, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with our Sheridan Police Department right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Give your graduate a gift they can use anywhere with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. As a customer, you can load up to $1,000 on a gift card with no purchase fee. With a Visa gift card, they can buy gas, dine out, or treat themselves to something special. The options are endless. Make their big day even more memorable with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. Visit First Federal at 671 Illinois Street to purchase yours today. Member FDIC.
Attention breakfast enthusiasts! McDonald's is introducing a new trio of bagel sandwiches. First, the bacon, egg, and cheese bagel. Or sink your teeth into a sausage, egg, and cheese bagel packed with flavor. But wait, how about a hearty breakfast experience? Steak, egg, and cheese bagel. That'll satisfy your morning hunger. Delectable bagel creations are available exclusively during breakfast hours only at McDonald's, Sheridan, Buffalo, and Gillette.
You hear that? Why, that's the sound of your lawn not getting mowed right. Those blades are out of kilter, and that carb is set to choke instead of yodel. You have to add air to your mower tires every time you use it? Well, that's not good for the environment. Using up all that air causing global warming? Hendo Service Center can take the hickey up out of your giddy up and have that mower running smoother than Tennessee whiskey. Hendo Service Center, located on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Listening to birds chirping, a creek babbling, children giggling, steak sizzling, or sharing a conversation with a loved one is pure joy. Hi, this is Elizabeth.
JT.
And Dr. Addison Dempsey with Ebia Hearing and Sound. May is Better Hearing and Speech Month. We invite you and your loved ones to take a proactive approach to your overall health and reconnect to the vibrant and beautiful world through better hearing.
Connection is a key to happiness. Enhance your joy, protect your mental acuity, and find ease in communication through better hearing. Our staff offers comprehensive hearing exams, tinnitus support, prescriptive hearing aids, and more.
Let's be healthy and happy. Celebrate Better Hearing and Speech Month with us. To learn more or to schedule your appointment, stop by Ebia Hearing and Sound, 1273 Coffeen Avenue, or give us a call, 674-8920. That's 674-8920.
And welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning I'm speaking with Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain Tom Ringley. We're discussing myths and misinformation about the SPD, and some people will believe and post these things on social media, just kind of fanning the flames of misinformation to pass through a community. And I think one main reason and this is Floyd Whiting saying this, so some people share misinformation on social media, is lack of repercussions. There is no punishment, no penalty for sharing misinformation within a comment that slanders or misleads people. There's no blowback from anybody. You know, Fox News agreed to pay $787 million to Dominion Voting Systems to settle a defamation lawsuit over false election claims. If some people were forced to do something similar, I think it would probably slow it down. Any abuse or of power or authority by an officer absolutely needs to be reported and action taken. And people have every right to voice their opinion about their law enforcement agencies. But what if the claims made public on social media are false? Chief, is there anything the department can do in regards to that type of activity?
Well, first and foremost is set the record straight. And I've done that in the past when there was a situation, height of COVID, misinformation was put out there regarding some police actions. We released the body cam footage that showed what actually occurred. And so that's first and foremost is actually just try to set the record straight in a manner that doesn't, if it's not an active investigation, it doesn't, like we talked about before the break, doesn't compromise investigations or procedure or tactics or stuff like that. First, that's the biggest thing we can do. And actually, I'll retract that. That's the second. The biggest thing we can do is be transparent in all of our operations so that when an allegation is made about some sort of deficiency in our procedures or an officer, the bulk of the community knows the truth behind that already ahead mm-hmm. of time. You know, and that's been one of the Captain and I's goals from the start is to make sure that we are very transparent in all of our operations and that the community knows everything that we do and why. And if there's ever a question, we'll answer it openly and honestly, because when there are allegations made, you know, and there's a certain element of society that will jump on that and will believe it. But there's a silent majority, and I think it's a great majority that knows different than that.
I would agree.
And most
with
of the time,
you.
We kind of just ignore it and call it. I think the captain's word for it's white noise.
Yeah,
or a lion doesn't turn around when a mouse squeaks behind it, which is not to demean them. But also, we understand people have the First Amendment right to say what they want. Our Facebook page is a government page, so therefore we will not edit it except for vulgar language. People have the right to express themselves however they like. And we're not saying we're always right either.
Yeah.
Sometimes people who call us and make complaints, make valid complaints.
To which
we truly appreciate. It allows us to identify deficiencies in our training and policies and correct that. And we will give that person the appropriate feedback. So we're not perfect. We're made up of people and people aren't perfect. So we understand that and we do appreciate all feedback. But if it's truly important, we would rather people call us and have a conversation than I don't pay much attention to our social media other than what I post. It's here's what we're doing. So therefore, we may miss some complaints made on our Facebook page because I'm not reading them. It's not what it's...
Boy, it'd take you all day to sit there and go through everything.
Yeah. So it's... we're more than happy for someone to come in for a one-on-one. I know Chief's had quite a lot of coffee with people in their homes to sit down and talk about neighborhood issues and crime issues. We're open to that. And really, it's a more effective way for us to address concerns.
And I think, you know, having that kind of an open door policy really is what it is. Maybe people don't know that they can do that. You know, you don't have to voice, like if you have a legitimate, serious concern, take it to the chief.
Well,
things will happen.
Yeah, I got to be careful with that one too.
Right.
We have a procedure in place when it comes to concerns. And there's a chain of command that we follow in our investigative process because I am the final determination in the department rather, you know, say it's a valid complaint that an officer or dispatcher is getting some form of discipline. So I'm not the primary investigator in that. And I've had people come to me and say, hey, I got a question about this. And I always refer them to our process, which usually involves our first-line supervisors and our mid-level management supervisors.
And they are there managers. For a reason.
That's part of their, you know, job performance and accountability is part of their main objectives in their supervisory roles. So there's a ladder effect, essentially. It starts at a first-line supervisor level and moves up the ladder to me. And the captain being the review right before me, and to make a determination of the classification of a complaint, or if it, like I said, if it's a valid complaint and there's some sort of discipline, and I'm the one that administers the discipline in the department, I'm not the one that does those investigations. But that's when it comes to a direct complaint over officers. But when it comes to just concerns about safety, about different issues, yeah, I talked to a lot of people. Doesn't mean that I'm going to be able to make a resolution immediately upon that phone call, but I welcome people reaching out to me, reaching out to us, with, you know, just saying, hey, this intersection concerns me because of traffic flow, or this street, you know, those type of things, general higher level, big picture items.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm running out of time with you, but before I let you go, there are two misconceptions that are out there that I feel really should be addressed. We just celebrated our telecommunications officers, and they do such a fantastic job that I wanted to, you know, as soon as the captain brought this to my attention, I wanted to make sure that we certainly address this. When it comes to the information being received and being put out by our dispatchers, as soon as they get a call and they know someone needs help, there are resources on the way.
As soon as they know the location and the nature of a call, the nature's what's going on, they've dispatched the appropriate resources, whether it's law enforcement, shared and fire rescue, county fire, or the ambulance. There are follow-up protocols that they continue to ask, but either they've got a partner in dispatch who's listening in and doing the paging the resources, but they've also got a kill switch to where they can talk on the phone and talk on the radio at the same time. One just won't hear the other. And I think this is a national misconception, especially for ambulances. Mm-hmm. There's electronic emergency medical dispatching, which is a protocol. So not only can they give the caller treatment advice, such as CPR instructions, but they can also let the ambulance service know if there's any follow-up equipment or personnel.
Make sure you bring this.
But why they're asking you if they're pale or if their face is flushed, there are units on the way.
Yeah.
So people tend to get really frustrated with that. And we understand that as well, because how stressful is it to have to call 911 because a loved one's going through a medical emergency?
Yeah, terrifying.
So we understand that, but this is more to put everyone's mind at ease. We get all resources going as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And one more that I want to touch on is another set of individuals who work very hard for the community, mainly because my wife once worked for the shelter and worked very closely with our community service officers. But dealing with the shelter and the animals is not the only thing that these people do, is it?
No, that's not. They have a very large job description. And animals is animal calls of all sorts. The welfare of our animals in our community is I was going to say lion's share, no pun intended, of the duties of our CSOs, but they are code enforcement officers. They deal with as well. They do code enforcement through abandoned vehicles, through filthy premise. There's a lot of quality of life issues that the community service officers deal with as well. And they're when it comes to snow and ice removal on sidewalks so that pedestrians can travel free without risk of injury. They're very, very busy individuals. They do a fantastic job for us. They're very appreciated position, but they have, it's not just animals. It's an ever growing set of skills that are required by them.
Absolutely. And you know, when it comes to how they deal with animals, I can tell you that both of those individuals are animal lovers.
That's true.
You know, my wife has nothing but great things to say about the CSOs that serve the Sheridan community. I want to thank you two for coming in here and talking misconceptions with me again. I always love these shows. I love putting forth the true information in light of some of the the misinformation fires yes. that get going out there. So thank you. And I want to thank also your teams for being out there and helping us every single day. And I know you take precautions, but it's just one of those things. Please be safe out there, guys.
And, we will. Thank
thanks,
you,
Floyd.
Thanks for taking care of us. All right, when we return, we're going to speak with the Johnson County Commission Chair, Bill Novotny. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Planning for a busy summer tourism season? Be prepared for extra business with First Federal Bank and Trust Cash Management Solutions. Our local cash management experts will help you streamline your cash flow and minimize risk so you can focus on delivering exceptional service to your customers. Visit efirstfederal.bank to contact our cash management team today. Make this summer your best yet with the help of First Federal Bank and Trust, Sheridan's only mutual bank, member FDIC.
Make plans now for a 16-day cruise in January 2025, setting sail from San Francisco, going to six different countries, including crossing the Panama Canal and ending in Fort Lauderdale. Just $100 reserves your spot with Latitudes Travel and Judy Fuller. Final payment due late October. Ocean view, balcony, and mini staterooms available. Call Julie or Rick and ask about the Panama Canal cruise at 674-0656 or stop by Latitudes at 157 West Brundage next to Real Deals in Sheridan.
How do I pronounce it? Hamophilus.
What is it? Hamophilus? Hamophilus.
This is a lot of letters here. Hemophilus.
Before the vaccine, Hemophilus used to kill 1,000 children every year. Today, you probably haven't even heard of it. And for that, you can thank Vaccine. Are your kids up to date? Brought to you by the Wyoming Department of Health, paid for with federal funding.
Saturday, May 18th at the Johnson County Fairgrounds, 40 of the top PRCA bull riders will compete on their journey to qualify for the NFR. Gates open at 5 p.m. with food by Nubs Barbecue. The first shoot gate opens at 7. Join the after party with live music at the Cowboy Saloon. Safe rides will be available. Get your tickets at the gate or online at foreverwest.events. For updates, like us on Facebook at Forever West Productions. Extreme Bulls, sponsored in part by Sheridan Media.
Join the United States Air Force Band, Airmen of Note, from the nation's capital to Sheridan, Wyoming, as they perform a free spring concert, 3 o'clock, Sunday, May 5th, at the Junior High Early Auditorium. Tickets are free of charge. Get yours online today. For more information and to register, go to usairforceband.com. The United States Air Force Band, Airmen of Note, Sunday, May 5th, 3 p.m. at the Sheridan Junior High Early Auditorium. This event is sponsored in part by your friends at Sheridan Media. Airmen of Note at the Junior High Early Auditorium. For tickets, go to usairforceband.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, I am joined by the president of the Wyoming County Commissioners Association and the Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Floyd. It's great to be with you this morning.
Yeah, it's fantastic having you on. How is the weather over there in Johnson County? It's sunny out here, but just a little on the chilly side.
You know, it's the same, but I'm hearing reports around the state that there's snow and rain. So we certainly would love to get a little of that moisture, but any day that the wind's not blowing is a good day in Johnson County.
That is so true. Now, when it comes to the season, looking forward to spring and looking forward to summer now, we're in the middle of spring. But this is generally the time of year that a lot of government agencies, local government agencies, are doing their budgets. Where's the Johnson County Commission at in that process?
So we are just really beginning the budget So today, all of the departments and elected officials, their budget requests are due to the county clerk, who serves as the chief budget officer for the county, and she'll compile those. And then in about 2 weeks, she will present the draft budget to the commissioners. We'll then start our series of budget hearings. It'll go through June, work through the budget, and then in July, we'll get that adopted and start the new fiscal year on August 1. That's why one of the important things that we completed 2 weeks ago was a review of all the 1% applications. And, you know, so appreciate the law enforcement folks that you had on your show earlier. We're so thankful for Flo and all the folks in our dispatch that do an incredible job in some tough situations. And one of the things that we're going to be using some of our 1% money for is a major upgrade in the radio system all across Johnson County. We've got some spots where when our deputies are out or our road and bridge guys are out making repairs where they don't have coverage. And so one of the things that we're going to do, hopefully, as long as the costs come in where we think they're going to be, is actually bringing an old tower online. And this effort's being led by our new emergency management coordinator, Jimmy Catalina, to light up another tower down on southern Johnson County that's going to really hopefully improve our coverage and make sure that our law enforcement, first responders, everybody has the radio coverage they need.
That is fantastic to hear. And, you know, when it comes to rural areas, communication has traditionally been such a challenge due to the widespread areas and the hills and valleys that law enforcement have to traverse, not just law enforcement, search and rescue, fire, so many individuals that are out there. So that's great to hear that that's going to be improved. And yes, you know, the dispatchers over there in Johnson County, they do such an amazing job. I often get an opportunity to sit and speak with the chief of police over there in Buffalo. Fantastic operation that he's got going over there. He's had to, you know, pin some medals on some of those individuals for their life saving that they've done over the course of a few years. And Sheriff Rod Odenbaugh, you know, I often look back on those memories with him, being able to sit with him, have coffee, and discuss cases, discuss law enforcement procedures. I do miss that. He's a fantastic individual and a great sheriff. Now, when it comes to the 1% allocations, sir, how long did that really take you to sit down and review each application, and did you get a lot of them?
We really did, Floyd, and important things. You mentioned the sheriff. One of the things that we are going to do is replace all the ballistic vests for law enforcement. We've got some equipment that's aging out, and it was just really important that we use those dollars to reinvest. And the commissioners have about a month to review those requests that come in from all the departments. They can then ask questions. If it's a facilities upgrade, they can go look at it. I think there's a perfect example. There are facilities department asked for some money to repair three roofs. And we said, that's not what 1% money is for. You need to use your general fund dollars. Let's get those fixed right now. So there is a lot of due diligence that goes in to when those final recommendations are made at the commissioner's meeting.
Sir, when you sit down to look at your budget and it's kind of handed to you in the big binder, what's one of the first things that you like to look at or consider?
You know, one of the, honestly, the first things that I have to really consider is we're looking at our health insurance and our contribution to our employees' retirement. Everybody knows just how competitive it is to find workers right now. And we wouldn't be able to function as a county if we didn't have a blade operator, that smiling face at the treasurer's counter who helps you get your license plates, renew your tags, going into the clerk's office to get that marriage license. So we've got to make sure that we are paying a wage that is competitive, that we're providing good benefits, and also that our folks can afford to live in Johnston County, because the last thing that you would want is that your employee sees a decrease in their take home because their contribution to retirement or health insurance exceeds what it was the previous year. So they're actually going into the new fiscal year taking in less. So making sure that we take care of those employees is really one of the first priorities. And then looking at being a good steward of those tax dollars, where we're maintaining the equipment and the facilities that we have, and that's roads. We've got some water infrastructure. We've got work that needs to be done on the diversion at Lake DeSmit this year that we couldn't do last year because we had so much water, which is a good problem to have. Just a myriad of things that go in there. But that really, that first glance, the first number that I'm going to be going is looking at what we're going to be spending on health insurance and also retirement.
And it really is a workers' market right now. I spoke with the Wyoming Department of Workforce Services, and they recently had a career fair. And they said that, it's gotten to the point where individuals were ready to hire right there on the spot should they find the right candidate for the job. Switching gears on you here real quick, sir, another piece of information, very important to people, property tax updates. Are folks coming into the office looking for that information?
They are. And so if you're a taxpayer and last year you took advantage of the refund project and the program, you would have received a letter from the Wyoming Department of Revenue asking for you to go ahead and apply again. The nice thing is that the legislature actually expanded the eligibility of that program. So if maybe last year you just missed out on being able to apply for that program, please go in and see the county treasurer and apply for those refund dollars. They're yours. You're entitled to them. I want to get as many people signed up for that refund program as possible. Also, last week, most folks received their property tax estimate on the valuation of their home from the assessor. And so I know my property taxes went up again. The nice thing is you're seeing the positive work of Representative Crego and others to impose that cap. I know there's some folks in our community that, because the real estate market has actually cooled in their neighborhoods, they actually saw a reduction in their property tax. Make sure that if you have any questions, because there's about a month's window, if you would like to go in and visit with the assessor about your property, please. These folks are there to help you, to answer your questions. So please, if you have questions about your assessment or the property tax, come on down to the courthouse, go visit the folks in the treasurer's office or the assessor's office.
Now, I feel like you and I are constantly talking about the Bureau of Land Management, much more than you and I ever have in the past. Can you tell us about this conservation rule?
Well, I want folks to be aware that the current administration has published what they're calling their final version of their conservation rule, and we're in a 30-day window where we're able to review it, but there isn't really a comment period that's going on. And I'll tell you that the draft is pretty concerning. It could put our ag, it could put our tourism, and also our energy production at risk. And so I'm glad that the governor has taken a proactive approach to this, but I'm afraid we may end up having to litigate because this has nothing to do with multiple use. This has everything to do with limiting your ability to enjoy your public lands or our ability to have a vibrant economy in Johnson County and across the state of Wyoming.
Sir, is this somewhat like what was happening down in Rock Springs, where they came in, they saw a swath of public land that was used for multiple reasons by the community, and then imposed a conservation rule basically forbidding anyone from going on it?
It potentially could. They could take a section of public land in Johnson County and say that it is going to be conservation priority, and you would see no activity whatsoever. And so if you like to walk your dog out there, they may say, nope, this parcel is conservation only, and that isn't what our public lands are about. Our public lands are about enjoyment and multiple use.
Absolutely. Access, hunting, and as you said, agriculture. Now, what about these new sage-grouse land issues? I saw something about this pretty early on. I can't remember if you and I have talked about this one. There's so many of them that you and I have to go over. It just seems...
there are.
It's kind of strange. It seems like the BLM's just turned its eye towards Wyoming, and they're just, for lack of a better term, and in my opinion... land grabbing here.
Well, it certainly is concerning when you live in a public lands county like Johnson County is, and when you're in a public land state, and we're now dealing with, we have five drafts of their sage grouse plan. Their draft five is their preferred alternative. What's concerning to me about it is essentially it's going to turn all of Johnson County into what in the past has been called the core sage grouse habitat, which means we could face restrictions on the times of year that we're able to blade and maintain county roads, and that not just in areas where presently we are concerned about sage grouse lex. Certainly, if you needed to go out and drill a new water well, you may face a restriction or be forced to offset the disturbance. So there's just some really concerning things that this policy has not only on the public lands, but also impact on private lands. So the public is invited to comment on the draft. It's a huge document. It's over 1,600 pages. I'm working on Johnson County's comments. The Commissioners Association will also be submitting formal comments. At this point, we're just still trying to even get through the entire document. Jim Waller in our planning office has overlaid all the maps that they provided over the county parcels so we can understand exactly what areas of the county are going to be impacted by the five alternatives. But it is pretty concerning, and it almost feels like the BLM is rushing out all of these documents. And you see this at election times of administrations. We only have so much capacity to go through those documents, but these things have lasting impacts on our lives and our local economy. And it's really disconcerting because they're not treating local government as the cooperators that they are required by law to under the National Environmental Policy Act. We've tried to be good neighbors and good friends, but it's getting a little overwhelming. They're rolling out new plans and new documents, it seems like, weekly.
It is overwhelming. You know, as you said, that one document regarding sage grouse land issues, 1,600 pages, and you expect, not you, the proverbial you, the federal you, expects the public to be able to sit down and go through this document to make comment on it. It is disconcerting. And when I think about, you know, land use, public land use, the majority of it is recreation, agriculture, at least in my mind. And it seems like they've really flipped the coin on that. They just want to put a fence up around everything and make sure none of us can go out there and use it. You said that a lot of this may end up in litigation. I don't have a whole lot of time with you left, but when we talk about that litigation, I understand it is kind of a last resort thing. But you and the governor have had discussions on this, and you're very willing to push back on this, right?
We are, and I also want to give the legislature credit. They gave the governor additional money in this year's budget to do just that. And you have to have those attorneys in the attorney general's office or be willing to go out and pay somebody in private practice to write those comments, to write those briefs, so that you can challenge the federal government when they overstep it and remind them. Because the other option is to pursue a legislative fix through Congress, and we know just how dysfunctional Washington is.
Absolutely.
So I don't look for solutions from them.
Absolutely. Sir, I've only got about a minute left. Where can people get involved?
If you go to the BLM website and look for the comment section, they're there. Certainly, as we get a little closer to comment period, I'll make sure that we get those links to you so you can share those with people, Floyd. But you hate it, but you have to go to the federal government websites like the BLM or for the old growth rule that is coming up. It'll be the Forest Service website to provide comments on that.
Okay. Okay. So there's a couple different locations, but we will have those to you as soon as we get them, ladies and gentlemen, because this is essentially the way that we take part in this process. And I'm hoping that if we can get those comments out there, the federal government will be able to actually see how we would like to use our land. Commissioner, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on here and speak about these very important issues, especially the BLM land issues. I greatly appreciate it, sir.
Always a pleasure, Floyd. Have a great rest of the day.
You as well. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE. And 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Give your graduate a gift they can use anywhere with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. As a customer, you can load up to $1,000 on a gift card with no purchase fee. With a Visa gift card, they can buy gas, dine out, or treat themselves to something special. The options are endless. Make their big day even more memorable with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. Visit First Federal at 671 Illinois Street to purchase yours today. Member FDIC.
Okay, you got water down there that you want up here. 307 Wildcat Well Service is a homegrown, local well drilling company that knows everything about where your best water is and how to get it up to you. You need a well driller that you can depend on and trust to be your guy for the life of that well. 307 Wildcat Well Service is a local company with a local price. 307 Wildcat Well Service on Facebook or look for their ad in the business directory under Water Wells in the Country Bounty.
Cool, clear water.
Hi, this is Mark from the PO News.
And Yvonne from the Advocacy and Resource Center.
We want to say a great big thank you to everyone for the great turnout for Dining for a Cause at the PO News.
We truly appreciate everyone's generosity and support. If you missed the event and would like to donate to the Advocacy and Resource Center, please feel free to stop by the office at 136 Coffeine Avenue or call 672-7471.
This public service announcement sponsored by Pilch Engineering, providing landfill engineering services to Wyoming.
Hi, I'm Lydia.
I'm Lindsay.
I'm Emmy.
We are proudly representing the Bighorn High School Theater Department.
Our team has the opportunity to travel to Indiana to compete at the National Thespian Festival in June, and we are seeking funding to help us get there.
If you are able to help, please send any donations to Bighorn High School. If you have any questions, please call 674-8190.
Thank you so much for your consideration. We are looking forward to representing the Sheridan and Bighorn community on the national stage.
Sheridan County is home to some of the most beautiful scenery in Wyoming. Rolling hills, the majestic Bighorn Mountains, clean flowing streams, and fields painted with vibrant colors of spring. Hi, I'm Matt Brown with U.S. Bank. Trees for Trash is back, and it's time to step up and pitch in to help protect our natural beauty by participating in the annual Trees for Trash program Saturday, May 4th. Just bring your spring cleanup trash to the city landfill on Eastridge Road between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. Drop it off and receive a free Colorado Blue Spruce ceiling, along with a big smile on the way out. It's good for Sheridan County, and it's free. A big thank you goes out to our fantastic Trees for Trash sponsors, ERA Carroll Realty, U.S. Bank, Wyoming Corporate Office, Landon's Greenhouse at Nursery, Sheridan County, and, of course, the City of Sheridan. Mark your calendar now, Saturday, May 4th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the 2020